Good morning. It's 7:33. I'm Beneduccio. Senators put the highly anticipated prescription-only pseudoephedrine bill to a vote yesterday, but only after receiving a last-minute amendment. Ashton Mara reports.
On the floor, Senate Judiciary Chair Corey Palumbo moved to amend the prescription-only pseudoephedrine bill on third reading. His amendment would address someone buying cold medicine in another state and bringing it back to West Virginia. The amendment allows a court hearing before being tried on a drug charge when a person without a prior drug conviction is caught with less than 3.6 grams or the federal daily limit. That person must then prove to a judge they bought the drug legally in another state and intended to use it lawfully for medicinal purposes. Senator Evan Jenkins proposed a similar amendment Monday and questioned Palumbo.
And is this only allowed one time, or is there opportunities for the future?
One time.
Then please explain to me the staunch opposition to my amendment yesterday, which effectively did the exact same thing that said if you had the product, less than 3.6 grams, you purchased it legally, and you had the intent to take it in a legal manner, that you could not be charged. What's fascinating to me is that in response, you are crafting this method that once you've been charged, you can get out of it. Why couldn't we allow people to get out of it from actually having to be charged in the first place?
Because I believe your amendment would have allowed people to be in this situation 3.6 grams, and they could have done this dozens of times potentially. This allows one shot. You can get out of it on one time. And then beyond that, you're on notice. I mean, you should know beyond that that that's not something you should be doing anymore. Your amendment would have allowed that to occur on multiple occasions.
Palumbo's amendment was accepted unanimously. The senator says 2 years ago a similar bill was defeated by the chamber, but since, some things have changed. First, there is a wider availability of the conversion-resistant product that will continue to be available without a prescription. Second, he says the number of meth labs being discovered in the state has drastically increased, up from 229 in 2011 to 533 in 2013.
Meth has become such a scourge in our society, such a pervasive problem that reaches all corners of the state, that this is the action that we need to take to eradicate these labs, and it's the best thing we can do. Will it get rid of them totally? Absolutely not. But I think it's been shown in the other states that have tried this, the meth labs have been significantly reduced in those states.
Senator Clark Barnes says he's not opposed to doing something about meth labs, but still had several problems with the bill.
I rise in opposition because we're making it a prescription drug, which means we're turning it over to the medical community. The number one problem with drugs in West Virginia is prescription pain medication. It certainly doesn't take a great deal of thought to realize that when your number one problem is already in the hands of the medical community, then we may not be solving the problem by turning the meth problem over to the medical community.
Barnes also takes issue with the discontinuation of the NPLEX system in West Virginia, a database that tracks pseudoephedrine purchases across state lines, and also the effect misdemeanor convictions may have on gun ownership rights, which Palumbo tried to address with his amendment. Still, the bill passed 25-9, but not on party lines as anticipated. Republican Senators Jenkins and Walters voted to support the bill, unlike most members of their party, while Democratic Senator Truman Chafin voted against it. For West Virginia Public Radio, I'm Ashton Mara in Charleston.
The West Virginia House yesterday discussed a bill that creates a program encouraging employers not to lay off their employees. As Aaron Payne reports, the bill is progressing through the legislature.
House Bill 4409 creates the Valued Employee Retention Program with the goal of giving employers incentive to reduce workers' hours rather than laying them off. Legal counsel Alice Chakmakian explained the committee substitute for the bill and how it accomplishes its goal.
It requires employers to enter an agreement with the commissioner so that they would submit a plan explaining how, instead of laying off their employees, they would reduce their hours. And in exchange for that, the employee could get unemployment benefits proportional to the amount of hours that they've been reduced. So if they had an 8-hour day and they cut them back to 4 hours, they would be eligible for 50% of their otherwise what they would get if they were laid off for unemployment.
The program is intended to be short-term. Proposed programs from employers can only be approved for a period of 1 year as the business attempts to recover enough to return their employees to normal hours. Delegates had many questions for Chakmakian. Delegate Daryl Cowles asked about the fiscal impact the bill would have on the unemployment trust fund.
The annual benefit payments for this program are estimated to be $1.6 million. The U.S. Department of Labor will reimburse compliant states for benefits up to August 22nd. 2015, the benefit cost is based on several studies of other states, which indicate a 0.7% share of total regular benefits.
Despite a few objections, the bill was approved by the committee to be reported to the floor. During the House session, an amendment to House Bill 4067, a bill authorizing the Department of Military Affairs and Public Safety to put in effect legislative rules, was proposed by Delegate John Schott. One of the bill's intended purposes is to alleviate counties' costs to keep inmates in the regional jails. The bill allows the Regional Jail and Correctional Facility Authority to research if it can decrease the per-day cost of housing an inmate. Schott says his home county of Mercer is working its way out of over $1 million in jail fees. He says his proposed amendment would assure counties a way to save money.
The language that I'm suggesting we add instead is the following. If the preliminary projected cost per inmate day, and that's the way they measure this, per inmate day, indicates that a reduction can be implemented without jeopardizing the ability to implement a physically sound annual operating budget for the next fiscal year's operating budget, the RJA board, that's Regional Jail Board, shall implement an appropriate reduction in the rate charged per inmate day during the next fiscal year.
However, Delegate Doug Reynolds said the amendment, which was rejected by the Finance Committee, could have an adverse effect.
The incentive for the jail authority, even if they're trying to do a good job, would be to maybe disingenuously overestimate the cost, knowing that, gosh, if we don't, then we'll have to give it back. And then in future years, what I worry about is the Regional Jail Authority would be incentivized to have the attitude of, we better spend all the money this year, because next year when we put our preliminary budget together, then we'll have to give the money back.
The amendment was rejected by a voice vote. House Bill 4067 is up for full vote today. For West Virginia Public Radio, I'm Aaron Payne in Charleston.
This is West Virginia Morning at 7:41. Another round of donations is scheduled to arrive at a Wyoming County elementary school today. This is the second time that the nonprofit organization called the Good People Fund, based in New Jersey, has sent relief to the folks in Bud and Alpoca. About 170 customers, around 500 people, have been on a boil water advisory since September. As Jessica Lilly reports, it appears that the need for clean water won't go away anytime soon, as the situation has stumped lawmakers in finding who is responsible and how to help.
The water in Bud and Alpoca, including what flows to Herndon Consolidated School in Wyoming County, often runs various shades of brown, which can stain clothes, like this past weekend when an apparent power outage caused the pump to stop working. Residents were invited to the Mullins Opportunity Center to shower. The Logan Public Service District has worked to fix the filter, installed 3 flush valves, and other things to improve the quality, but the Alpoca waterworks system is dated. Alpoca is a small, locally owned company with limited resources. Senator Daniel Hall is from Wyoming County and represents that district. Hall appeared on the legislature today to discuss the issue.
The gentleman who ran the plant there passed away, and it just kind of fell to the wayside. And so the water quality has always been relatively poor, but has in the last few months went really downhill. And so now we're trying to put things back together.
Senator Mike Green also appeared on the show. Green says he's expecting an order from the State Public Service Commission that would help to remedy the situation soon.
My hope is that the Public Service Commission will give the authority to the Logan County PSD or the Eastern Wyoming County the authority to take over this water system to make sure that it can become operable and start cleaning that water to where it is potable for the residents of Wyoming County.
The senators say they've reached out to several state agencies to find a fast solution, like getting help from the National Guard, State Homeland Security, and the Department of Health and Human Resources.
I mean, I'm a little bit disappointed in our Department of Health and Human Resources at this point in this juncture. Their position has been that they've tested the water, they've issued a boil water advisory, and they, at that point, question whether or not they have any more responsibility in that. Well, I think they do. We will continue to work with the administration and the Department of Health and Human Resources to ensure that they are doing and fulfilling all their responsibility for the residents of Wyoming County.
And that seems to be the story across the board. Green indicated that so far, agencies have basically said it's not their responsibility.
We are now trying to find state agencies that will that have the due diligence and the responsibility to assist in this situation. We've not found that yet, and we will continue to be a voice. We will continue to turn over every rock we can until we find someone that will assist. The issue with the National Guard is the lack of a state of emergency. Mm-hmm.
The owners are working to close the sale of the company and turn it over to the Eastern Wyoming County PSD. But apparently, it's not a simple sale. The water tank sits on property now owned by NASCAR driver Greg Biffle, although his brother, Jeff Biffle, admitted they had no idea that the tank was on this property when Greg purchased it. Wyoming County court officials haven't been able to locate documents indicating Apopka Water Works had the right to lease the land, although the tank's been there for decades. In a phone conversation, Biffle told West Virginia Public Radio that they paid $30,000 in attorney's fees to ensure they were taking care of their responsibilities. The long-term fix, known as the Koval Project, will bring a new water main to serve the Bud Apopka area. The project has nearly a $5.7 million price tag, all of which, except $125,000, is abandoned mine land or AML funding. The money comes from a tax coal companies pay that's meant to help resolve public safety issues such as hazardous high walls or damaged water resulting from mining before 1977. Senator Mike Green.
We have to find a way to remedy this the situation now. Again, 6 months is unacceptable for the residents of any place, little less West Virginia, to not have potable water. Mm-hmm. So our main focus now is to find a temporary water source and until we can treat this plant, until we can get this treatment plant up and operable for these folks. After that, we'll look at any type of legislation or remedy once we really find out the cause of this problem and what the solution is, because at this point, we don't have an answer for the residents of Wyoming County.
But for now, the boil water advisory continues. This delivery makes 2,000 gallons of water from the Good People Fund in New Jersey. Principal of Herndon Consolidated School, Virginia Lusk, says other donations have arrived from the Delta Zeta Sorority and Sigma Tau Gamma Fraternity at Marshall University, a Girl Scout troop from Hurricane, the UPS Foundation, Spanishburg and Bethel United Methodist Church in Mercer County, and several individuals. Senator Daniel Hall.
People from Wyoming County are very resilient, and we're tough down there, and we're taking care of ourselves. But it does make the community feel very good that people from outside care enough to try to send help. Mm-hmm. We're very grateful for that.
Lusk says the school will continue to collect and distribute the water from Herndon Consolidated School. For West Virginia Public Radio, I'm Jessica Lilly.
Although the boil water advisory remains in effect, reports indicate that the water is not brown, as it was this past weekend. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. Keep up with the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. You can find great stories, photos, and videos, and you can subscribe to our West Virginia Morning podcast while you're there. We're interested in your comments. You can send them to feedback@wvpublic.org. Support for West Virginia Public Broadcasting's news bureaus comes from Shepherd University, West Virginia University, Marshall University, and Concord University. Our news director is Beth Voorhees. Our director is Bob Powell. From Morgantown, I am Beneduccio. Good morning.